when we try to speak about the supreme reality, we are faced with impossible paradoxes. That's why it is said he is ineffable, because he cannot be expressed by any speech. But even if we say he, there is a problem. Is it a he or a she or an it or all of these or none of these? This is the problem with the human, because human mind moves within a finite range and it understands things in finite terms. This is our problem, and this is what Sri Aurobindo is trying to reveal to us or resolve for us. Now, human experience of the divine. So we have gone from logic, scientific logic or material logic, to the next level, philosophical understanding, and then to the spiritual experience. So we will see that there are three kinds of spiritual experience primarily. I am not speaking of the steps on the way. Many kinds of things come. And at one level, everything is a spiritual experience, because spirit is everywhere. So depending on the percipient consciousness, everything can be experienced as a spiritual unfolding, because the creation, as the mother puts, is an objectivization of the supreme. So often we try to think rationally, why did God make the world? So he'll say, I didn't make the world. It is manifesting. Now this is a logic which all creative people understand. If you ask a creative person, why did you write this poem? Why did you write this book? What will he say? He'll say that this was inside me and therefore I have expressed it in the form of a poetry, in the form of a book, in the form of writing, or in the form of art, anything. The only reason is by expressing it, it has brought forth the delight which was held back within. That's all. That is the reason. So delight is the origin of creation. It is the impulsion which has led to this manifold world. And that is the only logic which will apply, because otherwise it looks like a waste. So much scattering of stars, energies, forces, objects. So one would say, why are you doing it? You would say, well, it's the delight which is expressing itself in countless ways, myriad ways. Then if we ask him that, why did you make me? He'll say, but there is no you, there is only me who has become you. So you see, this is a paradoxical language. So everywhere we experience this paradox, and that paradox comes, one line of spiritual experience declares that neti neti, neither this nor that. You just cannot define him by any term, any condition. The other line of spiritual experience would say iti iti. This too is the divine, this too is the divine, everything is the divine. And then it will add, yet of nothing we can say that this is God. Now this is mind-boggling, but very simple to understand. Say if somebody asks an individual, let us say somebody asks that, you know, this finger is mine. To that extent, something of me is there in the finger. But if somebody says, are you this finger? I'll say no. Are you the hand? No. Are you this? We can go to the whole body. No. So both will be simultaneously true, that I am neither the feet nor the hands, none of these. At the same time, all this is myself. So that's the difficulty of language, and that's why Sri Aurobindo says that the language has to be very plastic and wide and supple to express that. And this is what we find in Sri Aurobindo and Sanskrit. He says the Vedas and that's how the Vedas and the language of the, for example, one of the phrase, one of these verses is like this. Tade jati, tanne jati, tad dure, tad vantike. He is within, he is without, he is near, he is far. He is farthest than the farthest, he is nearer than the nearest. So usually you say, ek baat boli na. Don't confuse my mind. And one of the best ways to prepare the mind to receive Aurobindo's writing, that's why Mother speaks of wideness and plasticity. Because otherwise human mind cannot capture. We have notions of God. He must be a righteous person. He must always be doing good things. He must be a supra-ethical person. Extremely ethical, more ethical than us. But in his action, it doesn't appear that he is acting in an ethical sense. Look at Sri Krishna. Rightly or wrongly, the fact is that the entire Kurukshetra, out of 18 Akshayini, only 18 survived. So, human mind has certain limits within which it tries to. So, God is all good and whatever is bad is my property or somebody else's property. But if we have to have an integral vision of the divine, that's what Sri Aurobindo says, that why Arjun is given the Vishwarup. What is special thing about Arjun? One, of course, fortunately, he is not a Pandit. So he has not fixed God into boxes. But at the same time, Arjun has some ideas about, you know, what people say. That's it. And he is a seeker. He wants to know. And he is not shrinking from the world, that this is not divine. So that's how Sri Aurobindo says that he is given the integral vision of the Godhead, who is at once the origin, who is at once the preserver, who is at once the destroyer, and yet at once he exceeds all this world, and yet he is in every element of creation, in man and bird and beast and stone and mineral, everything is he. So because Arjun has this special quality, therefore Arjun is given. And of course he says, because he has been as a friend to Krishna, so he is the most impartial and he is the most partial person. If you look at it, depending on how you look at it. So there are lines in Savitri, because we are going to read something about the language which can communicate and why Savitri is so special. Read these lines from book 10, canto 4. A spirit who is no one and innumerable. You can either be none or you can be many. A spirit who is no one and innumerable, the one mystic infinite person of his world, multiplies his myriad personality on all his bodies, seals his divinity stamp, and sits in each immortal and unique. The timeless looks out from the traveling hours. That's why, you know, this muhurt. What is muhurt? Wherever, whenever God meets me, that is the muhurt. And he can meet us at any time. It's his marji. He can meet in the jail. Look at how Aurobindo didn't consult that in the jail will he meet him. Is it shubh or ashubh? Outwardly one would say it is a shubh muhurt that he was apprehended and sent to jail. But if you ask Aurobindo, it is the most shubh muhurt. Wherever the divine can meet us, that is shubh muhurt. So he can meet us anywhere. The ineffable puts on a robe of speech. Speech cannot capture him. And yet, human speech through which God has spoken, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Gita, and of course, Sri Aurobindo's writings and Savitri, where all its words are woven like magic threads, moving with beauty, inspiring with their gleam. This is the sign of spiritual speech. It has to be inspired. It has to bring a sense of beauty and delight, because that's the origin of creation. And every thought takes up its destined place, recorded in the memory of the world. That's why Sri Aurobindo said that, you know, not a comma is to be removed from Savitri. Every little bit has its spot. It is not English that Sri Aurobindo is writing, as one of them professor said, because they couldn't understand Sri Aurobindo's English. So he said, it is not English that Sri Aurobindo writes. What Sri Aurobindo writes is English. Because that speech has to be, you cannot express unless speech itself has to undergo a change. You can't do it in an absolutely well-formed language. You have to allow a certain degree of plasticity. the truth supreme, vast and impersonal, fits. So he is vast and impersonal, okay? Fits faultlessly the hour and circumstance. On one side he is impersonal, he has nothing to do with anyone. Yet in every hour and circumstance he is fitting faultlessly. Now my, urge to read Savitri, now that it is over, I can come to the life divine. It adds to the joy. So we see that human experience of God resolves itself into three main categories. One is that the divine is an all-pervading reality. So we may call as Brahman, we may say Atman, the self of all. All creatures. Now here Atman is not in terms of psychic being or Atma, or certainly not the ghost movies, but it's an all-pervading reality, the self of all. The second conception is, or the second experience is, he is beyond, and though creation is moving because of his presence, but he has nothing to do with it. Creation is unfolding because of his presence. He's there. But he himself has nothing to do with it. And the third is, he is the ruler, almighty king, who has made the laws and rules which he may follow, he may not follow. He is free. He acts in supreme freedom. So at once he is law and he is also the freedom. So to the first, the name, the Brahman comes from that, Braha, that which is extending in everything. So where is Brahman? Brahman is everywhere, in everything. And actually it's one of the most beautiful experiences and in terms of conception, because everywhere the Brahman is there. So is it tied to things? No, Brahman is also the absolute. So we have two ideas of Brahman. One is the absolute in terms of nothing that is in this relative world that can define or describe him. The second is absolute in terms of the relative. To understand it like this, that well, in a house, who is the absolute? The lady of the house. Okay, times have changed, okay? People should better reconcile with it. So this is, so she is the Brahman. She is absolute. Her word counts. And the other is where you see that there is somebody who is absolute in the sense that he has nothing to do with anything. If the same lady wears a sannyasin robe and walks out, both of them are used for Brahman. So one is that all pervading reality which is absolute. But absolute has become all these relative things. Now this is a paradox. Shobhinda will resolve all of them, but first we should state it clearly. So if he wants that he should tell us one thing, he will not say, because that is not true. He is the absolute and yet he is all these relativities. So that is Brahman. And endlessly he can continue with it. Even if there were million, trillion, still he would be the same. So we may say, okay, fine, mathematically that means you are greater, this is lesser. Human logic. He'll say, no, you are mistaken. Purnamidang, purnamadang, purnat, purnamudachyate, purnasya, purnamadaye, purnameva vasishyate. He'll say, in every part, I am fully present. So mathematics fails. But it has tremendous implications. Actually, these things have very practical implications if you look at it that way. We know the story of Sita, that when Ravan comes near, she takes up a trina and says, you dare not cross this line. The same story is in Kena Upanishad, that in every finite there is the infinite. And it's possible by a certain faith, by a certain vision, by a certain intuition to turn this finite into a means of expression of the infinite. And these are there related in India in so many ways as stories. For example, one story of course we know of Draupadi. The sari becomes literally supported by the infinite. Or in people went to Kumbh and they took a bath, holy bath. So how does it help? So one vision will be it's just normal water. But see, the faith can turn anything, because behind faith there is a truth. And that truth, that little water, becomes one with the infinity, which can use it and express itself through it. And for infinity, no rules count. So there are the rules, and there is something which is called as absolute freedom, and they walk together. Already the mind is beginning to spin. So this is the second conception. And third is, he is the ruler. So the names given to these are Brahman, the all-pervading reality, the Purusha. Purusha is the one who stands back, and Prakriti is doing things. Prakriti is all Maya, Moh, etc., etc. And yet it is somewhere, because of his presence, that she is doing the dance. But we are caught in it, we have to come out of it. That's it, Purusha and Prakriti of the Sankhya. And the third conception is, he is the Ishwara, he is the Lord. He has made rules, laws, including karmic laws. You obey them, then you are in the safe zone. If you don't obey them, then you have a problem. But what does Shri Krishna say on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? He says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. Aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. Sounds very strange. He should say, see Arjuna, I am telling you this, but you bear the burden of your karma. I am not responsible. Now what you will do is your karma. I am not responsible for it. But he is saying something completely different. He is saying, you remember me and fight this battle, and I take the entire burden. You will not incur any sin. You will not incur any grief. So you see the paradox. And everywhere we will find this paradox. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, yesterday someone was asking me how to prepare to read the Life Divine. Stay quiet, and if we don't know too many concepts, it can be a help. It's a big help actually. Or having read all the things that are written in Vedanta and the Gita and the Veda, we feel that there is something more which is missing. So these are the two people for whom it works best. One who does not know anything. Sri Ramakrishna said that there is hope for two. Who are these two people for whom there is hope? He says, the unlettered peasant. The man who doesn't know anything much, and he is ready to read. Everything is God's word. He reads like that. God has written. So he just absorbs everything. He doesn't argue, reason, how can it be this or that. And he receives it beautifully. His mind opens up, expands, and the consciousness expresses itself. The second is, one who is having read everything, realizes its limitations and wants to go beyond. Who has read but realizes, because all the things are not answered. And so he wants to seek more. He is seeking reconciliation. For these two people there is hope. For the rest there is university degree. So this is how Sri Aurobindo reveals to us very beautifully some beautiful passages. I just want to read these truths. So page 317, these truths present themselves to our conceptual cognition as the fundamental aspects in which we see and experience the omnipresent reality. In themselves, they are seized directly, not by intellectual understanding, but by spiritual intuition. So this is the method which was used in the Upanishads. And the reason why they have used this method is because by reflecting or meditating upon them, the truth begins to reveal itself. And they are full of paradoxes. You are near, you are far. One who is unmoving, yet swifter than the gods. How can he be unmoving and swifter than the gods? So all this, he is into a blind darkness, they fall, who live into avidya, into a greater darkness, who live by vidya alone. He is the unborn and he is in every birth. You see how the mind gets totally. And the second very good preparation, excellent preparation, which I feel is reading Sri Aurobindo's Thoughts and Aphorisms. And Mother spoke about it, that you know he wrote these when Sri Aurobindo was transiting into the supermind, from the intuitive mind to the supermind. So what do these aphorisms do? They shock the mind. And by that shock, it suddenly opens because there is no other way it can receive those aphorisms. And she says that, you know, when he wrote this, the boys who were here, they just couldn't understand what is this writing. Because the human mind likes to understand things within limits. But both are true. It is true that the divine is everywhere. So the logical conclusion will be, then why come to Pondicherry? Isn't it? So you can't say he is more here. So only a spiritual intuition can tell you. And what will that spiritual intuition tell us? Because this is the common argument that people use for everything. God is everywhere. Why go to a special place? So the logic is, in the manifestation, divine is everywhere, but in the manifestation, see, that's where manifestation comes. He is more revealed somewhere and less revealed somewhere. He is more expressed, and that expression could be in anything, and less expressed in certain forms. That's the whole idea of, you know, the guru, the master, the avatar. Everybody has the divine within, but he is more revealed, more expressed, more manifested. So only in manifestation we'll see the degree. Manifestation creates a hierarchy. Otherwise he's the same everywhere and in everything. So he says these truths, okay, in themselves they are seized directly, not by intellectual understanding, but by spiritual intuition. A spiritual experience in the very substance of our consciousness. But they can also be caught at in conception by a large and plastic idea, and can be expressed in some sort by a plastic speech which does not insist too much on rigid definitions or limits the wideness and subtlety of the idea. A language such as we find hammered out into a subtle and pregnant massiveness in the Vedas and the Upanishads. So these are the, if we try to have very rigid definitions, then it doesn't work out because it will escape us. So this is the first thing that he is telling us. And now, how the divine escapes. The finite logic. But if we insist, last three lines, on applying a finite logic to the infinite, the omnipresent reality will escape us. And we shall grasp instead an abstract shadow, a dead form, petrified into speech, or a hard, incisive graph which speaks of the reality but does not express it. One, our way of knowing must be appropriate to that which is to be known. That's why mind must be quiet, very open, very vast, very subtle. Then we are ready to experience it. Otherwise the mind can go completely. So people who sometimes like to express in terms of, you know, a diagram, that this is mind, this is higher mind, this is illumined mind, this is intuitive mind, this is over mind, this is super mind. But super mind is everywhere, in everything. Equally it is true. It is true that it is beyond all these planes, transcendent. It is equally true that it is in everything. It is equally true it is hidden in matter. It is equally true it is there in the heart of every creature. But the finite logic cannot understand that. That is the problem. So this self-existence reveals itself again in three terms. We have already spoken of it, of its essential nature. Self, conscious being or spirit, and God or the divine being. Now comes a very beautiful passage. The supreme Brahman is that which in Western metaphysics is called the absolute. But Brahman is at the same time the omnipresent reality in which all that is relative exists as its forms or its movements. The Upanishad affirms, and this is the story of the disciple, I think it's Varuni, who asks his father, Guru, that tell me about Brahman. He says, you meditate and tell me and come up with page 338. So he says that you tell me about. So he meditates and says, well, matter is Brahman. So Guru says, all right, but meditate more. Then he comes up and says, well, life is Brahman. Then he meditates more. Mind is Brahman. So you see, he's not negating anything. All this that is Brahman. At the end, he realizes this truth, that all this, and that's what we see in, Shobhinda expresses it so beautifully and poetically. See the beauty of intuitive writing. Shobhinda, here he is writing like this, and our mind is trying to catch the concept. Now when he writes in who? In the blue of the sky, in the green of the forest, whose is the hand that has painted the glow? When the winds were asleep in the womb of the ether, who was it roused them and bade them to blow? And then he speaks about the beauty of woman and the laughter of boy and the blush of a girl. The hand that sent Jupiter spinning through heaven spends all its cunning to fashion a curl. Doesn't it give delight? Now try to understand. This is called Samam Brahmam. That's how it is described. Try to understand it logically, rationally. So you'll say, but where is in him? What is he? He is pure white. How is he painting blue? How is he painting green? And different colors. Now, there comes the catch. Pure white means all the possibilities and all the colors are inside. When he holds them back, then he is the absolute beyond distinction. When he releases them into creation, then he is the same absolute in manifestation. This is the only difference. So at one point, he is holding back all the possibilities. It's like a person who is sitting and you ask him, what are you doing? He may say, just sitting. Doing what? Sitting, that's what I am doing. It's a joy to sit. Any problem? When people ask Shobhinda, when he had come here, sir, what are you doing? Shobhinda remained silent for a while. Then he said, nothing. That's one. But the same person, see, it's the same, not two different person. Suddenly is moved by the urge to write or to act, to put in effort. Are they two different persons? No. And who is the, or what is the connection between the person who is apparently lying, not even sitting, lying, he is asleep, and the one who wakes up and writes? Who is the link? Something which moves. We may use the word inspiration, we may use the word energy. The energy which was quiescent becomes the energy in motion. That is the divine Shakti. It's very easy to understand that way, because it's in everyday life, everywhere the same story goes on. The same truth applies itself everywhere. So Divine Mother becomes the bridge between that which is beyond all and this that is manifested. She is the one who nudges Brahman. Please, time to wake up, time to express, time to write your cosmic poem. So he wakes up. Now who will write? She will write. He will bring out of himself numerous beings, existences. Because infinite's poem, so you can't have one character, two character, endless characters. And yet it is the one whom she is expressing in countless ways through all these characters. That's the whole story of creation, where all of us are the one divine, yet there is the variation. Because all of us have certain roles to play. Like in one movie you play one role, another film you play another role, and yet you are none of these roles. You know, there was a character called Pran. Seen his movies, I don't know, some generation might have seen. He always acted like a villain. But he was one of the most decent persons in the industry. He neither smoked nor drank. But in every movie he'll do everything which is unthinkable. So you see, that's the whole beauty that of creation. So, now, the Supreme Brahman is... Okay. The Upanishads affirm that all this is the Brahman. Mind is Brahman. Life is Brahman, matter is Brahman, addressing Vayu, the Lord of air, of life, it is said, O Vayu, thou art manifest Brahman. And pointing to man and beast and bird and insect, each separately is identified with the one. O Brahman, thou art this old man and boy and girl, this bird, this insect. So often people say that, give us some, you know, nowadays this is a guided imagery, meditation, and you start thinking of a light coming down. But this is a real meditation. What is this meditation? All this that is Brahman. Bird and beast and insect and man and everything. It's very beautiful. That's exactly what Sri Aurobindo was doing in the Alipur jail, where he was walking past and constantly Sarvakhalvidam Brahman, Sarvakhalvidam Brahman. So my own version of that was when, you know, in one of my phases, so I said, I want to see mother everywhere. So I started playing, all this is the mother, all this is the mother. Then I prayed that I want a Sanskrit thing. So something came in Sanskrit. So I asked someone that, is this okay? My Sanskrit part, I don't know. He says, yeah, this is okay. How did you write? I said, I didn't write. I said, okay. All this is mother. Mother is all. So then slowly you begin to, it's like a capsule which releases its truth. And that truth cannot be seen. Otherwise it will be misapplied. Because all this is mother, then how do you deal with, you know, people? But this is a very profound truth, a formula which releases itself, and then the understanding comes. So she says, all this is Brahman. Brahman is the consciousness that knows itself in all that exists. Brahman is the force that sustains the power of God and Titan and Demon. The force that acts in man and animal and the forms of energies of nature. Brahman is the Ananda, the secret bliss of existence, which is the ether of our being and without which none could breathe or live. Brahman is the inner soul in all. It has taken a form in correspondent with each created form which it inhabits. Now this is the other part. If it limits itself, it has chosen to limit itself. It's the same power which is acting in the demon, the snake, the beast, the bird, the man, the devas, all devatma shakti everywhere. But it limits itself. Now you see, how does the Upanishad describe this? Kathopanishad describes in a very beautiful way. Agnir yathaiko bhuvanam pravishto rupam rupam prati rupa bhavuho. Then again, vayur yathaiko bhuvanam pravishto. So as is the vessel, so it shapes itself. That's why the mother insists on making the vessel the aadhar. Because it's true that the divine is everywhere in everything. But if the vessel is not ready, not capable, it will not be able to hold. If the mind is very narrow, shut in small rigid formulas, it cannot hold that reality. It will go mad. That's the story of that Japanese in whom mother gave the experience of the infinite. And he ran away. He said, my God, I thought that there is nothing greater to me than my country that I love. Now all that is gone. Now it doesn't mean that he will not act for the country, but now from a very different poise altogether. So this is where the suppleness and wideness at every level, mother speaks of the supramental creation. She says one has to be very wide and supple. Another, see, every phrase can bring out a profound practical insight. So one of them is, Brahman knows himself in the heart of every creature. So people often say that, do you understand Sri Aurobindo? So my answer is, who can understand Sri Aurobindo? So I said, but Sri Aurobindo understands me. life is simple. Why do I need to understand Sri Aurobindo? He understands me and he'll make me understand what he wants me to understand. That's it. Period. That's what Swami Shannanand said. With eyes, how much can I see him? But he can see me. His eyes will fall on me. That's all that I want. People often ask this, you know, now in balcony, in front of balcony, when some of us go, we stand for a while and do pranam. I have had some very funny experiences. Okay, when doing pranam, sometimes there is a crow sitting on the balcony. This thing, isn't it? So I have to remind myself, this too is Brahman. And sometimes people are taking photographs right below. And I am doing pranam. And some of them look, who is this man? Is he a known person? Why is he doing pranam to us? So again, all this is the divine. But then people ask, but where is mother? I said, don't worry about it. She is seeing that this fellow is standing there for a moment. Don't worry whether your eyes can see her or not see her. That is our limits. So again and again, the finite mind is a limited mind. It cannot understand the infinite. That's where Shurbindo is leading us. But he will reconcile. That we'll take in the next class. That, okay, that's very nice to listen. But how are the two together and how are they reconciled? That will come next. But right now, just the beauty of he is the timeless and time. He is space and all that is in space. He is causality and the cause and the effect. It's very interesting. See, now if you suddenly read, he is the causality. So in everything we have three levels of causes. And you can address them at either of that level or all of the levels. Say somebody has an accident. So you can say why he had the accident, or as a doctor, why he fell sick. Well, immediate cause is the virus, the infinitesimal. Then there is intermediate causes, which includes a whole set of forces. He was very disturbed today morning, so he's, you know, somebody shouted at him, his immunity was poor, he had lost his cool, so his immunity. So there are intermediate causes, adverse forces, all this you can go. And what is the ultimate cause? The divine. It means in intervention, that's the beauty. In intervention, you can all use all of the three. You have to address that. That's why Mother says, supreme science is to surrender to thee. Does it mean that we don't then take the medicine or don't, you know, address the intermediate cause? No, because that same reality is everywhere. Even the dravya guna of a dravya is because that is how the supermind, the soul determinant, has brought it forth. So you can use it. You can bypass it. Everything. So see, it opens doors to so many kinds of understanding. To somebody, Mother would say, you will be cured, you can be cured only by my grace. Have faith in the grace. So this fellow threw all the medicine and remained alive from 40 to 80. He was declared he is going to die. This one person, try applying it to another. Somebody else, he would say, no, go to the doctor and take the medicine he prescribes. To a third person, he said, no, Mother, tell me one thing. Should I take medicines or have faith in the grace? She said, take the medicine and have faith in the grace. You can't tie the divine to one formula. That's why even quoting the Mother and Shurbindo, and she herself says, don't quote. And she says, when people say things that Mother does not like it or Mother likes this, and then they quote me, they create chaos. I mean, she says that this is not to be done. Why with one person she deals in this way and why with another person she deals in another way? But all that mystery is going to unravel. This is only the promo. He will tell us why the divine deals differently. The Brahman alone is, few lines below, and because of it all are. Look at the power of these lines. For all are the Brahman. This reality is the reality of everything that we see in self and nature. Brahman, the Ishwara, is all this by his yoga maya, by the power of his consciousness force put out in self-manifestation. He is the conscious being, soul, spirit, Purusha, and it is by his nature, the force of his conscious self-existence, that he is all things. He is the Ishwara, the omniscient and omnipotent all-ruler, and it is by his Shakti, his conscious power, that he manifests himself in time and the universe. See, this then is the first truth of spiritual experience. Page 339, last para I am reading. But this truth of being has at once an impersonal and a personal aspect. It is not only existence, it is the one being absolute, eternal and infinite. And then he says, the absolute and omnipresent reality, Brahman, manifest in such and such way. And then toward the end, it is Prakriti, nature of force made dynamically creative. Okay, we'll come to the next page. Okay. Okay, page 340. the second paragraph. It stands together and imposes itself by its convincing totality. But to the analysis of the logical intellect, it offers an abundance of difficulties, such as all attempts to erect a logical system out of a perception of an illimitable existence must necessarily create. For any such endeavor must either affect consistency by an arbitrary sectioning of the complex truth of things, or else by its comprehensiveness becomes logically untenable. This is a little exercise we all can engage later on. I have tried this several times with myself. Still I try, and very, very fascinating. When something happens, so there is an immediate way of understanding it, that why this is happening. So you can detect within you certain movements. You can detect motives. You can see complex motives. Then you can, one can go still deeper. Okay, what is it that my soul is wanting to experience through all this? Then you go still deeper. What is the will of the Divine Mother in all this? And you see all these simultaneously. They are not cancelling each other. At every level. So I have to keep the original motive while work upon the immediate motives. And keep on. That's how, you know, you we progress purifying. But what we do? We throw the baby with the bathwater. That's where the problem lies. That world is, as Mother says, that if the Divine wanted Nirvana, there would be only Nirvana. And then she says very beautifully, because of fear of error, we don't do anything. Why? Because there is the fear of making mistake. But Sri Aurobindo will say that errors are his steps upon the way. This is not an invitation to error. But to understand that there is simultaneously coexistence of these two realities. The higher and the lower. And if lower has to be sublimated to the higher, you have to constantly... And we will see it. That also is the Divine who is revealing to us. And one has to work upon it. It's a very fascinating journey if we see like that. But of course, difficult in many ways. So what are these things which are logically untenable? For we see that the indeterminable determines itself as infinite and finite. And as we see in stories, that Mata Sita says, this too is the Lord. And we see that, you know, how Prahlad says, this too is the Lord. And if we live by that reality, Mother says at one place, quoting the story of Prahlad, she says, if you really live with the idea of the one Divine everywhere and in everything, it is the greatest protection you can have. So Prahlad does that. He is thrown out, he is sent snake, I don't know what all, throwing out from the cliff, and what a lovely experience he has of the Divine everywhere holding him. But that's because he lived by this idea that everything is the Divine. Now it's not easy to hold this. And again, we have to understand, again there'll come many dampage which he'll reveal to us. So let's wait for that moment. The One becomes an innumerable multitude. The impersonal creates or supports personality, is itself a person, the self as a nature, and is yet other than its nature. Being turns into becoming, and yet it is always itself and other than its becoming. The universal individualizes itself, and the individual universalizes himself. So if you ask Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, you know, BBC and all these people, which side are you? He'll say, I am on no side. So what about the Pandavas? I am on their side. What about the Kauravas? I am there also. Are you fighting the war? No. But next person says, are you fighting the war? I am the only one fighting the war. So they'll say, India mein yehi jawab milta hai. Cannot. He is the non-doer, he is the soul doer. Isn't it? He is the soul doer. By his power everything happens. But he is also the non-doer. So how are we going to reconcile? Right now he is only stating to us how, if I may use, how illogical the infinite can be. But this illogical is not an irrational. or intra-rational, it's a supra-rational logic, and that Sri Aurobindo will reveal the logic of the infinite. Brahman is at once void of qualities, nirgun, and capable of infinite qualities. Everything in nature is him. Lord and doer of works, yet a non-doer, and a silent witness of the workings of nature. So this is where we see that if we look carefully at these workings of nature, once we put aside the veil of familiarity and our unthinking acquiescence in the process of things as natural because so they always happen, we discover that all she does in whole or in parts is a miracle, an act of some incomprehensible magic. So what is the miracle? I am alive and breathing, my heart is beating, it's a miracle. They are not in my control actually. That's the truth, it's a miracle. How is it happening? If I think about it, it will be mind-boggling, just even this thought. So, he keeps. And then he says, God and nature and even ourselves move in a mysterious way, which is only partially and at points intelligible, but as a whole escapes our comprehension. Okay, so we turn the page, just a few more lines we'll read before we take a break. Page 343. A law and process binding for our superficial being need not be binding on what is occult within us. Now this we can understand by the logic of evolution. The lesser one is on the scale of evolution, the more binding the law. That's answered the question of freedom and fixed determinism. Material world is strictly bound by law, even though freedom is there, as scientists would tell us. But by and large, you can predict. Try predicting a crow. With all the analysis, one does not know which way the crow will fly. Because there is something which has come up which is intent. Try predicting a human being's behavior. You'll fall flat. Don't try this. Especially a human being who has come and started living in the ashram. Because he is moving towards freedom. Unpredictability is bound to increase. Try predicting God's actions. You'll be completely lost. Somebody was asking in USA, what do you think of the US president? I said, you know, sometimes idiots become very good instruments of God. Through all irrational things. Now, I'm not saying that he is or he is not. But he can use. Imagine Churchill. He used to curse India. He used to say, oh, Indians, they don't deserve. They don't deserve freedom. If they get freedom, they will starve in famine, and within few years they will request us to come and take. This is a man. He was looked down upon an Indian, and the Lord used him as an instrument from his side. Because there was something in him which he saw. Imagine if we were there, we would say, Bhagwan, isko kyon? Hum hai na pure ekdam pakke sanatani. Why are you using him? That's why Bhuri Shrava curses Krishna on the battlefield. He takes names, calls him that you of all the people. Shishupal curses him during Rajasu Yagya. Because they cannot understand Krishna. He says, how can he be made to sit here? And we see this happening repeatedly. The ancestors of Rama, Brihadbal, Rama's ancestors, they fought in the Mahabharata war. Now from which side? Kaurava side. Rama, virtuous, Now that's how they have. See, this is a mysterious play. This is the beauty of the play. So he is all these things. He is none of these things, and yet he is the soldier doer. So that's why the human mind is unable to understand. Another thing which helps the mind very much to understand is Indian mythology, I must say. It prepares the mind for anything and everything. And at one point, the mind opens up to some kind of vastness by some grace. And we begin to understand. So a law, yet no law. Again, our intellect, founding itself on reason, finds it difficult to deal with what is infrarational. Life is infrarational, and we find that our intellectual reason, applying itself to life, is constantly facing upon it a control, a measure, an artificial procrustean rule that either succeeds in killing or petrifying life, or constrains it into rigid forms and conventions that lame and imprison its capacity, or ends by a bungle, a revolt of life, a decay or disruption of the systems and superstructures built upon it by our intelligence. Page 343. Parents, please read this. Try to control life by the mind, you will either finish it or petrify it. So sometimes children, mother spoke about this, you know, when people ask that these children are not very well mannered, she says, who wants very well mannered children? It's true, they are not very well mannered. But they have a spark. Now this is interesting. Very well mannered children are like namaste, paav lagun, and then they, you know what happens after that. But these children are very different. See how new creation is going to shape and what a confusion it is going to create. Because the mind's rule authority is going to go away. We cannot understand the new creation. Because it's going to be totally new. It will not act on the basis of logic, but on a deeper intuition. So that's what she reveals to us. He reveals to us an instinct, an intuition is needed, which the intellect has not at its command and does not always listen to when it comes in of itself to help the mental working. But the being and action, this is the last, but the being and action of the infinite must not be therefore regarded as if it were a magic void of all reason. After all, these people say, I know. That means basically God acts randomly. Whatever he likes, he does. Capriciously. There is a reason. So what is that reason? But it is not a mental or intellectual, it is a spiritual and supramental reason. There is a logic in it because there are relations and connections infallibly seen and executed. What is magic to our finite reason is the logic of the infinite. So people ask Sri Aurobindo once that how come we are here? Why we are here? And he gives strange reasons. He says, physical connection with myself or the mother in some previous life. How can that determine? Well, that stamp is there. Second reason, he says that bhakti in previous life bearing fruit in this one. Third reason, he says grace. Incalculable. You can't calculate. So there is a reason, because the divine sees all the detail. He has all the map. The past, the present, the future. What he is not so much bothered about what we were. He is more about what we can become. He picks up that possibility, that potential, and starts pulling us through that pulley. So there is a reason. He sees the entire complex tangled web. We may call a person good or bad based on our outer vision of his personality. But he sees the forces that are operating. The tremendous forces. That's why Sri Aurobindo at one place says that, you know, the greater the possibility, the greater the difficulty, the greater the shadow. So she is seeing all this. So we may like, we may not like, that's not how God operates. So this is where there is a logic of the infinite, and that's what we'll enter into after the break. So right now it's like all magic of the infinite. Now I'll explain what is the logic behind it and how these apparent disconnected things are brought together. So 5-7 minutes, then we'll come back.